It's time to talk about Las Vegas with Ira. Each week, Ira David Sternberg talks with the celebrities, entertainers, writers, and personalities who make Las Vegas the most exciting city in the world. And now, here's Ira.
I'm taking a chance with my guest because he's got a sharp tongue and I may get wounded, but let's go for it. Vinny Favorito is headlining at Notoriety Live this Friday and Saturday, November 8th and 9th at 9 p.m. For ticket information, go to notorietylive.com. And for everything about Vinny Favorito, you can go to vinnyunfiltered.com and you can follow him on Facebook, Instagram, X, and YouTube. And Vinny, welcome back to the show.
I'll tell you what, I'm so happy to be here. And you're the first interview I'm taking. And you know what? You were always good to me back in the day when you had hair. And always loved doing your stuff. We used to do it at the Turnberry, I believe, the building.
Yes, exactly. Yes.
And you were one of the best interviewers, always fair, always nice. Plus, you don't just interview, you actually go to the shows and you back up your interviews, and I think that's why you're one of my favorites today.
I don't know if I can handle all this positivity from you, all these comments.
Well, that's where it ends. So listen, let me say this. I am super excited. Now, as people at South Point know, I go back and forth to Vegas to do conventions and stuff. Like, I do the big tow truck convention every year. That's coming up again in April. And when I'm there, I do for Gabe Lopez and Tina, who I love them. They're so good to me. I do the Dirty at 12:30 when I'm there at the South Point. Only guy to get a standing O every time, by the way. And they are the best fans there. And then before that, I do the New Woo Indian Reservation, where it's like a Costco for marijuana. I never seen nothing like it. I personally don't do any type of drug, but it's amazing. And they're so nice there. And the Native Americans love me there. So they that's the one show they come and sit and watch.
So Vinny, wait a minute. So what I'm hearing from you now is you just transitioned from, as soon as we started, from an insult comedian to a complimentary comedian.
This is just it's my path. And then I'll get to getting on you in a minute. Anyhow, as everybody knows, I was a resident comic for years. I was the first and last headliner ever at Binion's downtown when Harris bought Binion's for the World Series of Poker rights. They sold it an hour later to the Mountaineer, and they kept it for a year, so they brought me in. Then I went to O'Shea's thinking it was a hotel, and it wasn't, but we packed it. We packed it. It was great.
Right.
And then in 2008, when it was the night of the opening of the Olympics, as a matter of fact, I started at the Flamingo, and just the show was called Completely Effing Crazy. It was awesome. I was the edgiest show in Vegas, and I was there till 2014. Then for a short stint, I went to the Tommy Wynn Theater, and then I was about to sign with Hooters Hotel, and this great thing happened to me. I got a phone call from a woman saying, before you sign with Hooters, take a meeting with Red Mercury, Darren Feinstein. And I didn't know who he was, but Carlos Reynoso used to be the entertainment director at Caesars. He was working with him. And so because of that, I took the meeting and ended up signing with Darren, going to Westgate, got a 5-year deal, best deal I ever had. He turned my whole life around. I owe him everything. And a little over a year into it, I said to my wife, because we had two young kids at the time, and they're still actually young. My son just turned 16. My daughter's 11. I said to my wife, do you want to go home? I want to go home. And I went to Darren, and he goes, you know what? I got a lot invested in you, but I respect what you're doing. No one quits a residency. And it was the best deal I ever had. It was so good. I went to him and said, let's lower this a little bit because we're off strip. And he said, you know what? I'm a millionaire. And no one's ever said that to me. Whatever you need, you got. And he's awesome. He's really awesome. And hopefully one day, maybe I can hook up back with him. But going back and forth, like I say, and my friend Joey actually met this guy, Chris, from Notoriety, took him to dinner, did a conference call with me, and he was like, you can get Vinny Favorito? And I said, yes. And we made a deal. So I'm going to do November 8th and 9th, opening weekend. And then a few weeks later to a month later, I'm going to start a weekly show. But I'm going to fly back and forth from Boston, do Fridays and Saturdays. And the comments on my Facebook and Instagram have been phenomenal. All the people so happy I'm coming back. And let's face it, these young guys, God bless them. I was in Vegas. They were all, then all of a sudden, all these stadiums and stuff were coming up. And these young guys, they're making money hand over fist. But I am an intimate crowd type comic. I'm like a Rickles. You remember Milton Berle gave me the nickname Rickles with Venom, which still sticks. I'm politically incorrect, but I do it with likability. I'm the best ad-libber ever, and my crowds live for that. And
well, I think that's your saving grace is your modesty.
Yeah, exactly. I'm awesome. So I want everybody to come. The tickets, especially Friday, the opening night, are selling like crazy. We're already over half, and I still got 2 weeks to go. And but Friday and Saturday, some people are going to both shows. I'm very excited. And
if I might interrupt, because it's becoming an infomercial and I want to have a conversation with you as much as I can try to.
Anyway. I really don't care what you have to say. Go ahead.
So when you decided to go back home because of your accent, you went back to Georgia. And then what happened?
Yeah, Georgia.
What brought you to
And you were brought up in a Catholic neighborhood.
Exactly. What brought you to Las Vegas initially? I want people to get a sense. For people who don't know who Vinny Favorito is, what brought you to Las Vegas? I know you did a bunch of roasts. You did Magic Johnson, et cetera. But what actually brought you to Las Vegas way back when?
Well, when I moved to, it was Nick's Comedy Stop in Boston, sent me to, they were my business manager, sent me out to L.A. And I was in Santa Monica for 5 years. And my girlfriend at the time, when now is my wife, came out. And we were there. And I got a pilot with Fox Family. Didn't get picked up. And the same week, Las Vegas offered me my own show because I had been working Vegas. I used to do the Tropicana when it was the Comedy Stop. But then when I moved to the West Coast, Bud Friedman was like a father to me. I started doing the improv. And I had won the San Francisco Comedy Competition in 1998. So I had a buzz on me. And I was the number one ticket seller at the improv. So these guys offered me my own show with Caesars Entertainment. And I was there from, like I say, 03 to 14, long time.
Yeah, no, that's great. How did you know that your style of comedy was going to work? Or did it happen organically, or were you trying different kinds of styles and then you came across the Vinny style, which is yourself?
No, I since day one, I've always been a crowd guy. And my first manager at the time said, you know, that's not always going to work. Plus, you make it tougher for the other comics to follow you. And I go, well, isn't that the whole point? And he says, well, when you're the headliner, then you can do what you want to do. And I kind of stuck to that. And I have so much material, but no one's ever going to be funnier than my audience. My audience members get so nervous and so jumbled up, and they're so honest with me. That's how nervous they are. And they'll give the stupidest answers. Like I asked one lady one night, I go, what's your nationality? And she goes, Texan. And I go, no. They get so nervous, you know. Like I had this, whenever I find an Italian guy on the show, and my ad libs become part of the show that you can use, or but whenever I find an Italian guy in the show, I'll always ask him, so what do you do, waste management, concrete, or construction? I had this one guy one night. I said, what's your name? He says, Joey. I says, where are you from? He says, Chicago. I said, you Italian? He goes, yeah, I'm Italian. So I asked him, what do you do, waste management, concrete, or construction? Swear to God, he goes, little of both. I said, no, that's three things there, Joey. So the crowd and I work so well together, and some people will come up to me and listen. I think, as you know, I was one of the best people coming back shows there was, and I'm the only show they tip to sit in the back. And
oh yes, you don't want to sit in the front row, exactly.
When I
to see, I would always sit several back because I didn't want to be picked up.
But people would come back over and say, I've seen you 8 times and you've not gotten me yet. I said, well, I guess we'll see you a 9th time, you know, and they're really loyal fans. They're like a cult and they've always had my back and I appreciate them so much. Even when I sell stuff after the show, I don't leave till the last customer is gone. I'm not one of these ego guys like, okay, well, I don't have time for you people. Without them, I'm nothing. You know what I mean? So, and once the word gets out, and my buddy Mike, owns one of the digital billboard companies in town, the trucks that go up and down. Mm-hmm. He said, Vinny, I'm putting your show up on the truck, and he made the thing, and that's going to be going up and down the strip. So people are really helping me out. My buddy Adam, who did my background, which you'll see at the show, is really cool. And I'm just excited. It's going to be like, listen, like I just walked out on my front stoop, and my friends are out front, and that's how the show is. It's like we're shooting the breeze on the corner, but I'm kind of dictating which way the breeze blows, you know?
So when you're going to be flying out on a regular basis, as this becomes...
You put that together, did you? Go ahead.
Yeah, I did earlier from something you said. I'm like Vinny. I remember something you said from 10 minutes ago and come back to it.
You are amazing.
Not very well. So, but if as it becomes a regular thing, do you think you're going to do a kind of a stay a little longer in Vegas in between flying back and forth just because it's such a hassle to fly all the time?
You know, comedy aside, we have, like I say, two young kids and they're in school and they're the most important thing, you know? So I don't mind the traveling. Hey, listen, when I lived in LA, I was traveling, going out on the road, you know, 3 weeks out of the month. And I was, you know, I'm used to it, but flying to Vegas is actually a piece of cake. So I'll fly in on, you know, Friday mornings, and I'll fly out on Sundays, and, you know, unless I have a meeting or something. But no, I'm good with that. And then in Boston, every Thursday night, I do Nick's Comedy Stop, where it all started for me, in the theater district, downtown Boston. So I'm pretty happy what I've put together here. But notoriety, I got to tell you, look, we all know downtown. And the Strip, I don't care, it sucks. I every time I go there, now the baseball stadium's going to be put up. The traffic, it's like L.A. You got the sphere, like people never saw a big round ball before then. And it's just, it's craziness. And the locals know, they don't want to be on the Strip. Downtown is booming. The new Circa that opened, and my buddy Barry has a steakhouse there, which is phenomenal. And I mean, went downtown to have my meeting at Notoriety, not realizing it was in the old Neonapolis, the old movie theater. Mm-hmm. And they've made these great showrooms. And my room, which is on my Facebook and stuff, is gorgeous. I got the Robin Leach Lounge. And it's the perfect setup for me. And they're right in my lap. And people are just going to be like ducking grenades. It's going to be so awesome.
Did you ever get, see, there's that infomercial again. See, I want to get into some of this regular conversation here.
I answer
letting
questions.
Me take over my own show occasionally. Do you ever get an audience that doesn't speak English? And how do you handle that? In other words, all of a sudden you have a busload of Japanese tourists and they don't speak English. What do you do? Or has that even happened?
Now, you get one or two here and there, but never a busload because they're forewarned. Everybody's forewarned. If they've been to my show before, they're in the line going, have you seen them? Be careful, you know. And that's the buzz on my show. And no one can complain because of the disclaimers, easily offended. Right. You know, not the show for you politically. Greg, maybe I should add, if you're Japanese on a bus tour, this isn't the show for you.
When you move back to Boston, I'm going to jump around a little bit, but you like that because you're nonlinear as well. But when you move back to Boston, did your friends and relatives say to you, you don't have the same accent as when you left, or you sound different because you were in Las Vegas so long?
Never lost my accent. I'm the same. This is how I've talked all my life. I don't know how people lose their accents. It makes no
sense. I've seen people that lose their accent or they modify it a little bit. Yours is still strong, which is
they really should
speak English, as far as I'm concerned.
I don't get it. They're obviously followers, not leaders.
Do you find that because, and you learned this, that you're better as a solo act as a headliner than as a part of a two or three performer situation, such as in a comedy club, because again, you're so strong that unless you're the headliner, the other two guys will get wiped out. But and it's such a singularly different show that you almost have to headline by yourself.
Well, you got through that word singularly.
Whoa, wasn't easy. One. Wasn't
easy. Been up all night working on that one.
I was.
Like in Boston, I try to help the younger comics, so I do shows, but I headline every show I do. So, because I'm a ticket seller here, where a lot of acts for some reason aren't selling tickets, so I became the headliner of every show, and I give these younger guys, and they're very funny. These up and comers. Boston has always been known for talent, and I'll have them each do 15 to 20 minutes, and even headliners that will middle for me, and they're legit headliners, but it's just an energy thing. And then I go up for like an hour, but my show is so different all the time. And, you know, I do some jokes up front, and then once I go into the audience, that's the whole thing. And I am a one-man show in Vegas. they actually started, like, downtown, they had a magician, and people started coming late. And I go, why are you coming so late? They said, well, we've seen the magician. And I'm like, ah. So we ended up, when I moved to O'Shea, showing some of my celebrity roasts, then I would come out. And then Flamingo, I would just come out. Because everybody would say, who opens the show better than you? And if the opener doesn't do a good job, now I have to open the show. You know what I mean? I've thrown younger guys on stage in Vegas just to give them a shot, you know. But yeah, I'm a one-man show because it's notoriety is going to be like an hour and 15 to an hour and a half. And I'm just, they're coming to see me, and that's what I'm going to give them.
When you finish the show and you're meeting people afterwards, and, like, as you said, you hang around until everybody has had a chance to say hello or have something signed or buy something. When you are done with all of that and you leave, are you still, do you still have that high from performing? Does it, and how long does it take to wear down where you can then take a nap or go to
never stops?
Never stops.
That's why I was the class clown in high school. I'm always the same way. You know, if I'm not breaking your chops, I don't like you. And what I'm known for is my memory. My memory and my shows. As people coming out, I call them by their name. Sorry, my dog didn't realize they had a Zoom meeting today. So can you get him, please?
That's fine. I like dogs. It's good. Jesus. I like the love the barking. Yeah.
We got a little cockapoo. His name's Zidi, and he knows he's Italian. I told him to wait in the car. But my memory is crazy. I mean, and people go, oh, my God. And here's the biggest one, Ira. I've had people come out of my show. Flamingo's happened a few times where they'll go, you know what? People told me about you. And I came to the show and I said, the first couple you messed with, he said, all right, they're a plant. And then the second guy, and then and when it got up to like the 10th person, he goes, I realized I'm not the only guy who bought a ticket to the show. You really do this stuff. And I go, yeah, I do. That's what I do.
The other thing you do too, is in addition to remembering people's names, you remember what they told you, and you 10, 20 minutes later, you come back to them and reference it in a funny way. And
that's why I love crazy. You remember all that. That is so true. And you think it's over, and then I tie everybody together.
Right. You go back and embarrass them again, which is the best part.
And how about when someone comes in very late to the show and I've already messed with 20 people? I recap everything I do. That's the best thing. My staff used to hope someone would come in late just for me to do that.
Did you always have that facility, that ability to remember? Because that is a unique part of your act. Is that?
Well, I remember you said facility first. Ability?
I like both, actually. I'm very versatile. So there's another word. So I use
all. No, three. I know. Right. You are smart, man. You are smart.
Somebody has to be in this conversation. Oh, sorry.
Yeah. What was the question?
Nothing. Who remembers?
See, my memory?
Yes, your memory. Do you always have my earpiece keeps falling out? If people are wondering why I keep doing that with my ear. For those
watching, you hold it in.
For those listening, they don't know, but those watching will know. Well, was your memory always that good that you were able to incorporate it in the act? There's another word, incorporate.
Yeah, you are. I'm telling you what, it's just amazing. I'm starting to feel a little melancholy because I feel weak and I would feel reluctant on continuing the conversation.
Try, it's, please.
Just
try.
The nomenclature is unbelievable. yes, my memory has always been my best thing. Someone could bring something up that happened. I've had people that showed that there was this guy and they would start to tell me what happened when I messed with this particular person. And I would finish the statement and they go, oh my God, how do you remember that? And I go, how did you remember that? I don't know.
Well, what always amazed me is that you never, with your great memory, you never decided to remember great, unusual intellectual words. You always kind of kept it simple. Why is that, Nitty?
Well, because a lot of people are stupid that buy tickets to come see me. No, I'm just kidding. You're the best, Ira. You really are, man. I'm surprised you're not. Like on a stage somewhere, you know what I mean?
I thought about it over the years. I thought about it over the years, but I couldn't do what you do, or I couldn't do it. I mean, that's a commitment on a nightly basis to do it.
But you're still sharp. You could be a great, what they call them, Toastmasters. You'd be good like that, you know what I mean?
Well, thank you.
You're a speaker. I'm not buffing you. I'm just saying.
No, I appreciate that.
You are a speaker.
So is this a way of asking me to be your opening act?
Oh, not at all. No. Okay. I want people to come back.
Of course. And you want them to buy tickets.
That's it. And that's another thing. You mentioned buy tickets. You know, in Vegas, no matter where I was, it was minimum base $60. Then you pay all these fees, and it went up to $100-something, depending what tickets you got.
Yeah.
Well, I've changed that. This opening weekend, they're $30 tickets. You never in your life saw me that cheap in Las Vegas. And it's $30 because I've cut out all the middlemen. I'm producing the show, and I'm excited about it. And I'm excited about the venue. People say downtown. Well, that's what I thought people would say, but it's great. The only thing is people don't realize, like, when we went down there for our meeting, you go on the circuit, it was like $30, $40 to park. Under notoriety, there's a parking garage, and it's $3. But people say, well, if you go past it, well, use your GPS. How about that?
Yeah.
They charge you $3 an hour or something. Plus, they validate up at notoriety. So I don't know how you can miss this.
It's
everything's cheap.
Well, the other thing, too, is your show is $3 an hour, from what I understand. So the combination of the parking and your show, you can get out of there in $6.
Oh, you're not. See, that's why you'll never make it as a comic. That was horrible.
They're not all good ones, Vinny.
You were giving me Jewish prices. Very nice.
Yeah, one thing I always thought about and never asked you, which is that, did you ever have, or maybe I did ask you and I can't remember. You can remember, but I cannot.
Mm-hmm.
Did you have a particular person, I don't want to say was your mentor, but maybe someone that you watched when you were growing up that you thought, this will help me to develop my approach to comedy? How's that for a great question?
That's a great question. And you know what? I've answered this question many times. I am always compared to Don Rickles, who I love. Don Rickles, love him on the roast. And he was way ahead of his time. I don't care. He was just unbelievable. I wanted to do this thing. And I actually met him at the Trop, at the gift shop. And he knew about me because I said, I'm working at the Comedy Stop and you're in the big theater. It's a pleasure to meet you. And people compare me to you. And he's, what's your name? And I said, Vinny Favorito. He goes, oh, you're the kid. And I go, yeah. And it was always my dream. He passed me the torch, you know. But coming up, you know, I actually looked up to a couple of Boston headliners that were just, I couldn't believe how great they were. So much talent that you wouldn't even know about. It was so great. But as a kid, I was actually a Jerry Lewis fan, the black and white movies. No one made me laugh more than him. Nobody. And then when he saw me at the Improv and I did my first telethon, I was blown away. And then I get called a year later to his office at CBS with four other comics to honor Henny Youngman. And we were all going to do one-liners on the telethon.
Nice.
Yeah, and then I did a private show on his boat in San Diego. So
That's even better.
Yeah, and that was the ultimate. But he was the one who really made me laugh. And, you know, everybody's out there, their styles are all funny. All these comics are funny. I'm very tough to make laugh. But Rickles, definitely, I'm honored that I'm always compared to him.
Did you ever think about, because you do excel in the intimate setting in a room, did you ever try doing a large stadium or arena or theater just to get a sense of what that would be like dealing with that many people? And would it even work because you are that intimate performer?
Well, it always works because people love, no matter what size the venue, people love to see other people get ragged on. They just love that. But, and I reach out pretty far, but am I a stadium type comic? No, I've never had the opportunity. I've opened some big rooms, like in Anaheim, I worked with years back. I was living in LA and I never met Lewis, but I worked with Lewis Black and I was opening for him. And that was a pretty big theater. And I've done some big theaters, Atlantic City and Vegas venues. But I like the 200 theater, you know what I mean? 150 to 200, even 250, which is what I had between Flamingo and Westgate. That's my cup of tea because I can involve everybody. It's a very, like I say, it's like I come out front and we're just shooting the breeze. I'm like a neighborhood show. I'm a blue collar show. But whether you're rich or poor, black, white, gay, straight, everyone in my room is equal. And they realize that when they're there. I'm an equal opportunity comic. I mess with every walk of life. I don't care. And if you have a bad attitude, if you're one of these woke people looking for trouble, wrong show. Wrong show. That sells tickets to me. You want to come in with a clipboard and grade me, go ahead. I really don't care. I'm doing this way too long.
I have a profound question, and I don't know if you can handle profound questions, but let me try. Did you ever analyze, that was a sort of a joke and insult at the same time, but obviously it fell on deaf ears with you, so that's good. The question is...
You can edit that out later. Go ahead.
I'll leave it in. I like it when you don't react. Did you ever wonder what it was, what it is about, like you said, when you rag on people, what it is that makes that funny for other people? Because that's the genesis, there's another word, of your act, which is you're ragging on people. You're doing it in a very funny way. But what is it that causes people to laugh when somebody else is being ragged on?
Because they're like, oh boy, thank God it wasn't me. Or, you know, because they enjoy it. Plus, people really do love. And I know when people say, how do you know, like, if someone gets there? I know instantly when I say, what's your name? Away from, I pick right up on their attitude or whatever, like they don't really want to be involved or they're just going to be tough to talk to. I won't stall the show. I'll find an excuse, a little noise or a twitch, someone move their arm, and I'll switch. But 90% of the time, they're there because they want it. They know what the show's all about, and they want it, but they love when they can hide in the weeds and see someone else getting, you know, destroyed. But I don't really destroy them.
I think what it is, at least this is my opinion, and I'm not profound, but I think that it is part
of... Now it's funny.
Thank you. I'll leave that in too. I think it's just part of human nature, and you've tapped into it. And because that's your skill and talent, you're able to do that on a regular basis. Not everybody can. Someone may be funny with a particular joke or even one evening with somebody, but you do it so consistently because you've tapped into that part of human nature that likes to see people being ragged on or joked about or terrorized. How's that?
Yeah, well, I joke about myself. If I could joke about myself, I can joke about anybody. And, you know, that's the beauty part of comedy, but I don't do personal. Like I don't do, hey, you're fat or you're bald or I don't do those kind of things. I get in people's heads and talk about their career and or a stupid response they made. Yeah. And when I find their Achilles heel, I run it. I run with that.
But I think that's the human nature element that you've tapped into, because you're not picking on the superficial stuff.
Right.
You're picking on somebody being fat or bald. You're going into their human soul and your and brain and finding out about them in a very short period of time in your performance, and then zeroing in on that and making it funny, and then coming back to it a half hour later and amazing everybody by remembering what you diagnosed about that person.
Yeah. And people, you know, like there's been people in my lines before, and my staff will hear, like a guy say to his friends, I'm going to heckle this guy. And then I'll hear about it and I'll get in the show and they point out who it is, but I'll get in the show and I start doing my thing and then no heckling. And then I go to them and I go, weren't you the ones in the line said you're going to heckle me? What happened? No, no, no. We realize you're not the guy. that's good stuff. But once in a while you get a heckler and that's when I unleash.
Yeah.
Because I want the show to be, you know, just fun and moving and just boop, boop, boop. And when you got someone who's trying to screw it up, I will bury you. And even back in the day coming up, like security would always, like if there was a heckler at a comic in Boston, they'd remove the heckler. With me, they'd say, no, 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 wait till Vinny destroys them, then we'll.
Then we'll take them out.
that's what my reputation became. But, you know, look, my crowds is truly the best. And my crowds, like I say, they're cults. And if there is someone who's a jerk, I don't have to do anything. My crowds actually handle it.
Oh, yeah, they'll turn on them.
They're awesome.
That's a great way to leave it. My guest has been Vinny Favorito. He's headlining at Notoriety Live this Friday and Saturday, November 8th and 9th at 9 p.m. For ticket information, go to notorietylive.com. And for everything about Vinny Favorito, go to vinnyunfiltered.com. That's vinnyunfiltered.com. And you can follow him on Facebook, Instagram, X, and YouTube. And Vinny, thanks for coming on the show again.
Thanks for having me, Ira. And I know you got plans on the 8th, but I hope you can come in on the 9th as my guest. You're awesome. Bring your lovely wife. Say hi to her for me.
Absolutely. And,
she's one that hangs in there. I love you, brother. Thank you so much.
See you next time.
You've been listening to Talk About Las Vegas with Ira. Each week, Ira David Sternberg talks with the celebrities, entertainers, writers, and personalities who make Las Vegas the most exciting city in the world.
Anything you want us to be.